What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of comics that we really like, usually. Or rather, since comics aren't coming out, we're talking about some of our favorite comics from yesteryear, specifically ones that have been voted on and chosen by you on Twitter. After each episode, we put up a vote on Twitter at Comic Book Live. We've asked you guys from titles you've suggested, from some beloved comics, some little-known comics, and ultimately we're reading through those, and it's been a lot of fun. And this week's episode is all about a volume that was one of the first books that we really hardcore went for, I think, on the show.
Yes.
Which is Scott Pilgrim, Volume 1, Scott Pilgrim's Precious Little Life by Brian Lee O'Malley. Now, we're just going to talk about the first volume, at least at first, but I do think we could talk about subsequent volumes, the influence of the series, the movie, etc., etc. But broad strokes, reading this book again, before we get into the plot specifically or anything, what was your takeaway coming back and seeing this book again after we first read it? And just to mention, it first came out in 2004, so it's been a while at this point.
Yeah, it's been quite a long time. And it has aged pretty well. That's great. I was worried it was going to feel very old, but it feels... I think the movie has sort of filled in the gap a little bit for a lot of this, and rereading it, I just watched like the first half of the movie, and it's so seamlessly the same for most of this whole volume.
Yeah. Pete, what about you? What was your takeaway from coming back to Scott Pilgrim once again?
I love the humor of it. I love the style, the art. It's a fun tone. It's a great world to get kind of sucked back into. As for us, like, I remember we got to go see a special screening before the movie came out, and we saw...
Oh, yeah.
And we saw an edited version where he ends up with knives. And I still, to this day, think that's a better version of the one that made it to the movie.
Well, you're definitely jumping ahead to the end there. We should also mention
right I am.
We call
me Old Jumps.
We had Brian Lee O'Malley. He came on our live show at one point.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't think that exists anymore because I think that was pre when we were doing podcasts. I went back and took a look and I couldn't find it anywhere, which is a real bummer. But... here's the broad strokes of the book.
What are you talking about? The alternate editing with knives?
What?
No, we're not talking about that.
No, I'm talking about Brian Lee O'Malley coming to our live show in New York and being a guest on our show. Pete.
Okay.
The real confused. Thing that happened to us, not the imaginary thing that happened in a movie. So Scott Pilgrim focuses on a kid. He lives in Canada. His name is Scott Pilgrim. He is 23 years old, and he's dating a 17-year-old named Knives Chow. And the brilliant thing about the book, which I still really enjoyed, even in this reading, even to the fact that I've read this book a bunch of times, though not for a couple of years, is it slowly opens up what's going on in this world, where at first you think, okay, I'm kind of reading like an Americanized romance manga, maybe, and that's what's going on. And it's about this layabout kid who's in a band named Sex Bob-omb. Maybe he's a little nerdy.
Sex Bob-omb.
And he likes... this girl Knives, but about not even halfway through, I want to say a quarter of the way through, he starts dreaming about this girl named Ramona Flowers, and he keeps seeing her in her mind, and it gets weirder and weirder until she very casually reveals, when he orders a package from her, that she was traveling through the subspace highways in his mind, which is kind of like the first very weird detail. And then at that point, the book takes a turn where it turns out that we're almost in a video game world where Scott can fight people and they leave coins. He needs to fight her seven evil ex-boyfriends in order to date Ramona Flowers. And so while he's dealing with all of these things, like his pretty good but not great band, his 17-year-old girlfriend Knives, who he has never kissed and really only held hands with, and Ramona, who he seems to be truly in love with and has already screwed things up with by the end of the volume a little bit. How is this going to go forward? How is this going to develop? So that's the broad strokes of the plot. This is great. Like, I think the thing that I was responding to, and maybe this is what you hit on too, Justin, is the bits still work? Like, it's still funny beyond anything else.
It's still funny. It's such a great mashup of like an era in, like, when in the back matter of this first volume, he talks a lot about like how this like sort of was sat in his brain a long time before he actually wrote it down. And I feel like you can sense that because it's such, the references are so specific, like referencing a lot of manga tropes, referencing like the coins thing. I think he's referencing River City Ransom, that game, the old Nintendo game, where when you beat someone, they turn into coins.
Yeah, but that's also like, you know, a video game kind of bit, like the, you know, you get coins from like Sonic, Super Mario. There's a lot
Sonic
of coins.
Sonic is rings. If Sonic beats somebody up, he gives
you
rings.
Okay, all right, whatever.
Which
whatever.
Is, I wish what my girlfriend would give to me.
Yeah, rings.
Wow. Rings.
You want to be married more.
I want to
be extra married.
Married a bunch of times, like Sonic.
So the mashing up of all these different things and sort of creating a story out of this material while the story isn't referential, it's just like a great romance story, and while still being super funny, I think it's such a great mashup of things, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Pete, were there
the subspace thing is so weird in the rereading of this. I was like, this is weird.
It's funny rereading it again, knowing what is going in, because I really can remember that moment when I was reading the book, because I don't remember whether we read it for the show or just I was reading it because it looked interesting or I'd heard some buzz about it, but like, I didn't know anything about the book going in other than people were like, hey, this is cool, you should check this out. And even in the back of the edition I have, I got the colorized evil editions, which have the evil ex-boyfriends on the front, which it also, we could probably later on talk about the experience of reading this in color versus black and white, which it was originally. But it's such a weird experience getting into it. And I remember that moment when she starts talking about the subspace highways, where I was like, wait, what is happening here? Where it turns your brain around. And I think there's a function there of having this big play where it's not the recognizable thing, which is like later on when he's fighting Matthew Patel, I think is the name of the ex-boyfriend.
Yep.
When he's fighting Matthew Patel, and that's very Street Fighter, and the dropping the coins is very video game, whatever video game, Sonic, River City Ransom, etc. But that big play sort of like is this shot across the bow that this is not going to be the book you think it is.
Yeah. And truly the genius of this series, is the fighting of the exes, I think, that's where it's like taking this, a lot of the smaller bits are like putting video game, elements on top of regular life. But the idea of elevating, like meeting the ex into a video game battle, I think is so smart and what really makes this shine.
Yeah. Pete, were there any moments in particular that jumped out to you on this read of the book?
Yeah, Pete, you have a precious little life.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I just think that like what's great about this is like, not only is the storytelling great, but the like just the pacing and the cut twos. Like, I love the looks, like the when something happens and then they cut away to the people glaring and the looking around. Like, just the thought about the reader and the storytelling, the pace. I just think it's really kind of mind blowing when I revisited it, even though they're kind of like, I've read it before, but it just kind of took me as like, oh wow, that's right. And I also, it's one of those things where like, sometimes when people make a movie from a comic book, it's like, oh, I want them to do something different. I want them to do the exact same thing. I feel like they did such a great job of like making little changes, but kind of really keeping the heart and everything that was important to it, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of to your point and kind of to your point as well, Justin, sort of what both of you were saying about the characters. I love the amount of work that was put in here right at the beginning, where there's just casual things that show up. And again, in the edition that I have, there's a lot of back matter where he talks about developing the characters and how people like.
Yeah.
Can you stop bragging about how your edition is better than ours?
Listen, man, I had money to buy a book. I don't want to brag about it too much, but
wow, Mr. Library over yes, here. Yeah. That, bragging about buying a book? God, I've never heard anyone be so cocky. This guy bought a book. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. But, well, he talks about how, like, there are things clearly, like, Kim Pine is in there, but she's just a very minor character of this book. But there's enough details about her character that you know she is important, and she does, in fact, become very important later on. On the other hand, yeah, you have somebody like Stephen Stills, who shows up, where the reason I brought up the back matter is, like, he says, I could not figure out his hair and kept changing it every volume. So there's sort of this sense of, like, the sense that I think comes through in the tone of the book, that he knows exactly what's going on, and it's very calculated in terms of the plot, but in the same way, he's allowing himself a level of improvisation when he goes through it to change the story as it goes.
Yeah. I agree. Like, it feels like these characters spun around in his head so much, and they feel so real. I feel like I know a guy like Stephen Stills. Like, Kim Pine, you just get her right away, and you're like, oh, does she have a thing for Scott still? And that's why she's so sharp with him. They used to date, of course. Like, all those details are just so great. The name itself, Kim Pine, is just, like, so good.
Yeah. All the names.
Young Neil being a flip of Neil Young. Yes. Like, great.
I love Young Neil. Young Neil is one of my favorite characters, particularly, like, he gets so many comedy bits, and you were saying this earlier, Pete, but there's a thing where I think it's Knives Chow gets called Sex Bob-omb's biggest fan. And Young Neil, there's just a pause, and then he runs out sobbing for the room. And it's so funny. So good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing that really struck me, this was a moment that my wife and I actually used to say to each other all the time. That was one of my
favorite. Now he's bragging about having a wife. Oh, Jesus. Okay.
I don't want to say that she paid for my book, but maybe she did.
Oh, yeah.
The thing, so there's.
And that's a bunch of rings shot out of her, and you cash those in for the book money, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I'm just happy to get the insight into your marriage here. This is great.
Yes. Thank you for putting the question mark at the end of the word marriage. I appreciate that.
You're the one that keeps talking about marriage? Multiple rings.
What I was going to say, though, is so after Scott discovers that Ramona is real and not just his literal dream girl, he tracks her down to a party that's happening, and he goes around the party trying to find Ramona, and he goes up to somebody, and he's like, hey, do you know this girl who has, like, she's this girl, she's this really interesting girl, and he describes her as has this hair that looks like this. And takes his fingers and puts them down on his sideburns, so they're pointing down, to ape Ramona Flowers' hair. And that is such a specific detail in the way that Brian draws Scott in that moment is so funny. That jumped out to me the first time. It stuck with me since, and I still enjoyed it right now.
I thought that he meant payas. I thought he was looking for an old Orthodox.
Like a Hasidic, like a Rebbe?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I guess we'll never know what he was after.
There's an argument to be made that this is a loose adaptation of Fiddler on a Roof.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I've been trying to convince people of that for so long.
Yeah. What else jumped out to you? Other moments? Anything in particular? Pete? Anything you want to chat about from the book?
I just
or
think
do you
that
want to
like
just keep looking down and reading it.
Well, yeah, I'm flipping through it. It's hard to stop. It's just one of those things.
Busted.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Are we
doing a podcast right now? Or should I be looking at you? Is it more than audio? Are you upset at me that visually I'm not giving you the eye contact that you
need?
Well,
I think if you're looking down and away from the microphone, you're not necessarily pleasing the audio podcast either.
Oh, okay.
Eyes are the window to the soul, Pete. And while we know that you are soulless, it's still nice to see that emptiness.
Mm-hmm. And the mouth is the window to the voice. Well, so Pete, moments. I'm sure everybody really appreciated this angry peek behind the curtain. moments that you liked in the book. Was there anything else you wanted to call out?
Every single fight scene is just fantastic. the way it just kind of seamlessly rolls into action, like it happens all the time, even though Scott Pilgrim looks like somebody who's never fought in his life. I just think that it's just the way it's handled is just kind of fun, you know?
Another cool thing just on the artistic side, the architecture of everything really is so well done, well chosen, and it feels like hyper specific as opposed to being just like a random apartment. It's this sort of bunkery looking place where Scott and Wallace live. Very cool. Very meticulous.
Well, he talks about that a bit in the back matter for the edition that I have.
Jesus Christ.
And he did actually base this on real places, including the apartment that Scott shares with Wallace, I think, was an amalgamation of a couple of places that he lived. The house that Scott takes Knives to was a real house in Toronto. And he talks a little bit about how he wanted it to feel like it actually took place in a place, you know, which I think... That is another thing you have. We haven't really talked about this, but like even in this first volume, there are very real deep emotions that you feel, particularly between Scott and Ramona, hopefully because you are feeling this love, this hope that's growing out of them, but also between him and Knives because you feel a pang for her. This is her first love probably at 17 and he's being such a dick to her already. So you have all this emotion and it plays off of like, the fantastical nature of Fight My Seven Evil Ex-Boyfriends in the same way that having this stuff, having Scott be a weirdo dork who's bumping around town plays against the realism of the places in the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Do we want to talk about the movie at all a little bit?
Yeah. You were saying that you had some thoughts revisiting it, Justin.
Well, it's God, it's such a good movie. And when this came out, I mean, we were all so excited.
Unbelievable.
Like the music's so good. The fact that they were able to, Edgar Wright was able to convert the book very seamlessly, but also elevate it, with like, especially those opening sequences when the band's playing, you see this camera just like moving away. The cast is perfectly, everyone's perfect. So perfectly cast.
Chris Evans's best role of all time is in this movie.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a crazy statement. I mean, he's barely in it.
Dude, I don't think so. I think he's a major part of it.
What about Brie Larson? Captain Marvel and Captain America are in the movie.
Yeah, I know. Pretty crazy, right?
So wait,
she kills it as the singer.
Justin, when you said you had some thoughts about the movie, that to me framed it as like, I have recontextualized this in the intervening time, and there's things that haven't aged as well. But so far, it sounds like you just loved it.
No, I do have. I was getting to that.
Okay.
So the movie was sort of not a big win when it came out initially. I feel like it's become a little bit of like a popular culty movie that people are like, that movie's legit good.
Yep.
And in rewatching the movie, I think the point that feels where it fully is like, oh, this is where people like disengaged and went too far is the musical number. In the Matthew Patel fight, which is in this volume. And it was funny rereading the book. It's not necessarily a musical number. And so I was surprised it's such a harsh turn in the movie. And I think that's where, like I said, that's where people disengaged. But in the book, it didn't have to be that way. Does that make sense?
I mean, I think it is a musical number. Like they're rhyming and they're singing and they're having this Street Fighter-esque fight towards the end of the book, where it's revealed that Scott is the best fighter in Toronto, which is another crazy detail that's just thrown out very casually towards the end. But they are singing and rhyming specifically because Scott breaks the rhyme scheme and Matthew Patel calls him out about it. He's like, dude, what are you doing? That doesn't work for the song we're doing at all. And Scott's like, whatever, I wanted to say it. And then punches him a bunch more times and gets a combo. But I haven't watched the movie in a while. I've read the book more recently.
Oh, wow.
Is it how
good?
How does it play out there? Like full on musical number?
Yeah, it's you get a bunch of it's the lyrics that are in the book. And all these like demon women appear next to him and hipster chicks. Matthew Patel is singing. And it just, I feel like that's, I could just see people who are like, oh, cool, fight movie, and then it's a musical number, and it feels like that's where people just sort of pull back. And yeah, I know they are singing in the book, but it feels like part of a larger vibe of the music contest that's going on there. So I don't think they had to jump the genre in the movie the way they did, because in the book it's definitely not disturbing when they go to this, to the sort of dance fight. And in the movie, I think it is.
Mm, also, really great line in the movie. I'm not bi-curious, I'm bi-furious. And there's just a... what I like is, like, each of the exes have, like, their own kind of separate deal. And, like, it's also this period of time in Ramona's life. So it's kind of like a fun reveal about, like, different phases that she was going through. And especially, like... the part where she was like, he punched a hole in the moon for me. Like, yeah, of course I dated him. You know, he punched a hole in the moon. I just think it's the movie is just, it's really an accomplishment of creativity and fun and just like amazing, seamless madness. I mean, all the different things that are there is music. There is, like, the bass battle is unbelievable, the fight sequences, the humor, the romance. There's so much tackled in this movie. I mean, they make fun of the movie in the middle of the movie. It's really just, like, the part where they're, like, walking by and he was like, yeah, the comic was better than the movie. It was just, it's so great.
One thing that I had completely forgotten about until we were going to tape the show is that the final volume of Scott Pilgrim didn't come out until after the movie came out. And the ending, of course, is different. I think, I don't know, I prefer the comic book ending, and I just prefer the comic book overall because it gives it more room. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think I agree with you. The comic is definitely the extra air, like P was talking about, with the facial expressions and everything in this book. It's the space serves it so well. So yeah, the book I think it's better.
I mentioned this earlier, but so this time I was reading the colorized edition, which I hadn't read the last time. I read the black and white version, and it's great. Like, the color is actually really good, but it actually makes it a very different reading experience. And in particular, it really struck me the, I guess you could call it, first date between Ramona Flowers and Scott Pilgrim when they're taking a walk outside and it slowly becomes snowy as it's going.
Yeah.
In black and white, that's very stark because you're going from black to white and the snow eventually fills up the entire page before you have this beautiful double page spread of them jumping through the door into the subspace highway. With color, it's really fascinating too, because in a different way, because like it pulls the color out of it very slowly, because you have these jabs of white that are happening on the pages as you're going through until they become bigger round circles of snow until the entire page is subsumed by it. I don't know. I guess I bring this up mostly if you've read Scott Pilgrim before and are looking for a different experience, pick up the colorized versions. I think they were put out in 2012 because it just feels like a different book and not necessarily in a bad way. Normally, I'd be kind of like, just read the black and white version. Don't worry about it. But it's nice to read it this way, too. They did a really good job.
Yeah, I agree. I like the colorized versions a lot. One other thing that I thought was interesting to mention is she works, Ramona Flowers, when he meets her, she's delivering for Amazon.
Yeah.
Which I thought was so funny. What a time capsule moment, because I think she's the only delivery person in Toronto.
Yeah, she's the only delivery person in Toronto. And Scott's supposed to be dumb and not know what to do on the internet anyway. But he's like, how do I search for this? What's the website? What's going on? Which is great and hilarious, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I love black and white comics too. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where the with the color versus the black and white, it really just makes certain things pop. I think though that sometimes when you have a black and white, it can be feel a little bit more dramatic and a little bit more powerful. But if you do something like with a kind of like Spirit, the way, or, you know, Sin City, where the color is telling a story as well. It can really move a story forward.
I would love to see a colorized Sin City, just like really throw a couple of splashes of reds and blues and stuff. That would be fun. The colors, by the way, were done by Nathan Fairbairn. I think that's how you pronounce his name. Probably not, though.
I think that's correct.
Yeah, there you go. But he did a real good job, so definitely pick those up. Before we start to wrap up here, any final thoughts about Scott Pilgrim Volume 1? Pete?
Very funny. It's worth checking out. It's a lot of times people are like, oh, this comic is hilarious or whatever, and sometimes comedy is very hard in comics. But O'Malley does it really well in such a kind of heartfelt way that you really kind of side with the characters right off the bat.
Yeah. Justin, how about you?
I'm going to give the next volume a whirl.
I will say I read this and immediately was like, well, I should probably read the rest of them. They're all.
I think I am going to. It is especially this the colorized version is so great to reread that specifically. I think I'm going to dive in.
Yeah, I held off only because we were only taping the first volume, but it's so smart and it's so funny and it holds up so well. So for whatever reason, you've seen the movie and you haven't read the book, or you haven't read the book in a while, definitely check out Scott Pilgrim's Precious Little Life. Couple what of things an endorsement. Before we go, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show to the internet every Tuesday at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. Those have been a ton of fun. This podcast, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen. iTunes in particular, leave us a comment. We appreciate those quite a bit. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. And we'll see you next time.